I'm going to throw this out there very quickly because my first reaction is this is a guy who told Stephen Drew to not take a $14 million qualifying offer, and now he's looking for someone else to blame. I'm being blunt, but you know that's the way a lot of people are going to look at it, that this is about Stephen Drew. I'm presuming you're going to tell me I'm way off base.
Well, first of all, I think what maybe most fans and writers don't understand is that the qualifying offer is not something that a premium free agent ever looks at accepting.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really something that when you're probably in the top anywhere from 6 to 15% of your of major league players, you know your talent commodity is something that is going to draw interest and attention in the free agent market. And when a player has to accept a qualifying offer is so early in the process, and the information is so general. When players go to make this decision, I just don't see any player, unless he was maybe well on in years, well past the age of 35, I don't see any player ever accepting a qualifying offer. So when fans or writers or people judge players on the basis of, well, you should have taken this offer, the reality of it is that the information that they have in early November and the number of teams soliciting them may exceed, 10 to 12 teams for each player, because all clubs call because they have general interest in these players. So the system as it's set up is not something where the qualifying offer is anything of value to a free agent player, because he does not have enough information in November to even begin making a decision. And I don't think it would be wise for any player that talented to make that decision, because more than likely, as it's proven out, the player will have opportunities that far exceed what qualifying offers represent. Also, under the rules, a player, for example, who signed after opening day, he would not have to deal with the qualifying offer the next season.
Okay.
Therefore, that gives him an advantage where this is a one-time event. And at a very young age, at minimum, he'd be free of the qualifying offer the next season, and which would create a real advantage for a player of this skill. So there's a lot of reasons why, independent of teams and their conduct, why qualifying offers are never accepted by players. It's really not an option for them.
Okay, Scott, do you really think that Rogers Communications, that ownership is being cheap with this, with the Blue Jays?
First of all, no one, when I said things about the city of Toronto, and of course I've dealt with Blue Jays and been in the city of Toronto many times, and also Rogers Communication as an owner, I said they're one of the top 7 or 8 franchises in baseball as far as their platform. It's a tremendous city. It is a great place to play. And it is an ownership base that is something that should create annually one of the top competitive teams in the game. The reference that I made when called upon was certainly has nothing to do with what the commitment that the Blue Jays have made for 2014. What I was talking about when the writer contacted me was that the Blue Jays have a rare opportunity, because the team with this type of talent and this type of expenditure and payroll that they have in 2014 is not going to finish in the bottom 10 again. They're going to be at minimum somewhere in the in the top 20 of baseball. They have a unique opportunity because they have finished in, you know, they're drafting in the protected 10, and meaning that they can go out and acquire talent for the first time in this organization's recent history. They can do so without losing first-round draft picks. And what I was talking about corporate stop signs was that you don't look at your annual payroll when you have this opportunity. You can go out and actually increase the amount of draft currency you have developmentally. You can increase the talent base you have, and you can also fill holes on this team. The Blue Jays can trade certain players and acquire pitching. The Blue Jays have no second base prospect in their system that is of a, what I would say, a top 10 in Major League Baseball player at that position. And to trade for that player, they'd have to give up a significant prospect to acquire someone like that. To go out and get a right-handed bat, they'd need a right-handed bat to, particularly in their DH area, to answer a deficiency they have with Lynn, where he hits right-handed pitching well, but not left-handed pitching. And there are teams looking for a player like Lynn who has contract control and is someone that would probably bring back a good pitcher. And certainly players that are out there, like a great hitter like a Kendrys Morales or a great player like Stephen Drew, those players are available for this franchise because they go, their payroll drops from near $140 million to $93 million in 2015, and their commitments in 16 are below $30 million. So this organization has flexibility in the long term, is what I was speaking.
Would Stephen play second base?
Stephen Drew has said that he would play, in his versatility, that he would play second base if a club came and made the position a long-term one for him.
Right.
And so the point I was making about the it's not that the Blue Jays are not spending in 2014. They are. What the point was is that the flexibility is you could backload contracts. You're going to have all forms of decision to make as your payroll's dropping $40 million in your commitments in 15, and it's dropping close to, you know, $60 or $70 million more beyond that in what you have to do in 16 as far as your versatility to make decisions. And when the key, the call here and the question mark was, how many teams have the ability? And if you don't annualize your vision and you have the ability to acquire premium talent to fill holes in your system and create the opportunity to acquire pitching, if you do so without looking at your club's payroll this year, but you can backload contracts and you have that versatility, you have substantial drops in payroll, it is really a time in my mind for a team to upgrade in a number of ways and acquire the talent that will help them in the current and the long term.
Scott, what if this is just Alex and Paul? This is just a philosophical thing on their part. You know, it's got nothing to do with the corporate stop sign. It's got, pardon me, it's got Alex just saying, I don't think Stephen Drew or Kendrys Morales are worth it at that price. I just don't.
Well, look, I know a lot about what Toronto thinks about players.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's good business for a general manager to come out and say that his team is, his board of directors or such is going to do X, Y, or Z or not do that. Mm-hmm. That's not his job.
His
job is to take the noted policies of the club and work within it. So this is really above a general manager's pay grade, these decisions. When writers ask me questions about what clubs can really improve themselves and why, it's rare that you have players who are You know, there are only 27 men that have 22 home runs and 80 RBIs in the game last year. Mm-hmm. And being a switch hitter, where you hit 280 from both sides of the plate, that player is of great value to a team that has a hole and has a need for a right-handed bat, and also would gain a left-handed bat as well for an organization that does not have a premium second baseman in it.
Mm-hmm.
Where you can go out and fill a hole without giving up number one draft picks. And by the way, look what you do in the draft currency market. By not having to give up a number one pick to sign players like this, you would save anywhere from $4 to $8 million by not giving up. That's what a first-round pick,
right,
say number 15, would worth. Further, is that because these players are 30 years of age, you gain the right to them. And as we know with Kyle Loesch, when he was 34, he had a qualifying offer attached to him. And so you get the direct, you are not giving up a first-round pick, but you're gaining a first-round pick on the way out, so that you're going to increase your developmental opportunities by getting a first-round pick by signing these players because they're so young.
Scott, you must have made this approach to Alex. What was his reaction? Because you're making sense to me. What was Alex's reaction?
Look, whenever I have a team like the Blue Jays that is the caliber of organization that they are, my job is to think creatively. My job is to go to teams that have the resources, and I also the teams that are attractive to my clients. And the Blue Jays are that type of team. I think they're that close. My clients like to win. And so my point is, Jeff, this is a very complimentary statement about,
right,
the position the Blue Jays are in, doing what's ever creatively to fulfill their needs. And it is not a suggestion that the Rogers ownership is anything but challenging to try to win. The issue I'm trying to look beyond is to say, don't focus on, you're going to be spending $30 or $40 million next year, and you may be spending 70 or 80 more the following year. And my point was, spend some of that money now. You can backload contracts. You can keep your annual budget near where it's at, and acquire the talent while you're also increasing your development dollars, and at minimum not taxing them. And that is a rare opportunity for a major league franchise. And that was the reason we had this discussion.